the government's put out a warning. There's been some sightings of coyotes around, and the normal coyotes we don't need to worry about. But if you see any coyotes that are carrying a box marked Acme, or if you see any coyotes dropping anvils from hot air balloons, or if you see any coyotes posting signs, say, detour or free bird seed, or if you see a coyote in possession of a giant magnet or in possession of a catapult, and especially if you see a coyote detonating explosives and TNT, or a coyote launching himself with a giant crossbow, you should call 911 immediately.
Especially for me, I'm a roadrunner. That's my alma mater, is the roadrunner.
Okay. Yeah. I saw that on the internet, and I thought that was funny. Oh, well, you guys do know that they lied to us with that cartoon, the coyote and the roadrunner, because coyotes are actually twice as fast as roadrunners, because two-legged animals generally don't run as fast as four-legged animals. And so, literally, the coyote is about double the speed of a roadrunner.
Yeah, but that would not make for good cartoons.
No, it wouldn't. Yeah, of course, they violate all the laws of physics,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, spend a lot of
it is a car. That's why they can only do it in a cartoon.
Right.
Yeah, but a roadrunner trying to take out the coyote just doesn't have the same.
Yeah.
That's true, but it is funny.
So, this morning, I want to... There's been a lot of things going on lately, the last few years, and it's interesting. We had a ex-president die. When George H. Bush was elected, everybody thought they were getting the third term of Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Everybody thought he was a great guy until he gave his notorious, infamous New World Order speech. And then we realized we didn't get another Ronald Reagan, we got a globalist. So what I'm going to share today is a little bit, well, why is globalism wrong? You know, wouldn't it be good for if we were all under a one world government, you know, and just, wouldn't that be wonderful? And, you know, we wouldn't have any more war, and everybody would get along fine, and everything would be, well, it's actually very devilish. I've seen a lot of things going on lately where I saw a high school teacher that got fired for referring to a student by the wrong pronoun, because I guess nowadays, you know, people can say, on Monday you can say you're a male, on Tuesday you can say you're a female, on Wednesday you can say you're a cat, and Thursday you can say you're a dog, on Friday you can be, well, I don't know, whatever. And people have to accommodate you. And this high school teacher got fired for not accommodating this person correctly. Another little kid got in trouble for bringing candy canes to school because the J looked like the J for, or it looked like, turned the candy cane upside down, looked like a J for Jesus. And that was unacceptable at the school. They're now trying to tell us that jingle bells, what were you saying? They're now trying to tell us that Jingle Bells is racist. Well, also then I remember when I was a kid, we watched the Snoopy Charlie Brown Christmas special. Mm-hmm. And the guy that created that, Charles Schulz, was very innovative and progressive at the time, and he made one of the little cartoon characters a black child and rather than him all white. Now they're saying because he only had one black child that it was racist. But he was being very progressive and very forward-looking by including kids of different races in there. And so basically what they're saying is 2 + 2 = 5. If you remember your George Orwell, 1984, and A Brave New World, and those kind of things. And what's going on is the UN wants to implement, it's called two different things. It's called Agenda 21. It's also called Agenda 2030. And they want to dissolve borders. They want to make a one world government. And this one world government would be unelected and not responsible to us because we couldn't vote them in or vote them out. And so I'm going to show you some things from the Word on why, how the devil's always wanted a one world government, and he wants unelected people to rule over us with an iron fist. And like in Europe now, if you, there was a guy, Tommy Robinson, he criticized the local government was working with Muslims, and they would take kids, young girls, that were like runaways, and they put them in a home, except they'd have one home for just one girl, and then like on the weekend, these Muslim men would line up outside and they would gang rape this little girl. And he, all he did was expose it and tell what was going on, and they put him in jail. And they lost the freedom of speech in England. If you, they're passing laws in England and Europe where if you say Muhammad's not the true prophet of God, that you can go to jail for 6 months.
And Obama actually did part of that, started that, like when his first year, I think in his inauguration speech,
mm-hmm.
he said something about there are consequences, or no one should speak against the prophet Muhammad, or
right.
the prophet of Islam.
Said, I believe said, the quote was, the future does not belong to those that slander the prophet of Islam.
There you go. And part of the reason they're getting rid of the Peanuts characters and all of our American traditions is because if they get rid of our traditions, then you know what they can do? We have no traditions. They can instill in our kids all kinds of other one world
which,
order crap.
If you know history, when Mao Zedong took over in China, they had what they called a cultural revolution, which what they did is they destroyed all aspects of traditional Chinese culture going back like 5,000 years. They destroyed all that and they replaced it with communism. And therefore, then they could institute any values they want. And part of what they want to do with Agenda 21, one of the reasons I started this out with a joke, this teaching, is because I wanted to lighten it up. Because this stuff can be a little bit heavy and depressing. But God gives us the victory. But anyway, one of the things they want to do with Agenda 21 is they want to institute a one-world government, but they also want to depopulate 80% of the world's population. So they think the world can't support whatever, how many trillion people are on. They want to have like just like a few hundred million and control everything from the top down. So let's go to Luke chapter 4. I'm going to be reading. I've been enjoying the message, so I'm probably going to read most of this from the message today. Luke chapter 4, it's a section we're all familiar with, but the message kind of gives us some different words here. Chapter 4, verse 1. Now Jesus, being full of the Holy Spirit, left the Jordan and was led by the Spirit into the wild for 40 days and nights, tested by the devil, and he ate nothing during those days, and when the time up, he was hungry. Well, yeah. And the devil, playing on his hunger, gave the first test. Since you're the Son of God, since you're God's Son, command this stone to be turned into a loaf of bread. Well, if you know the Orientalism, they made flat bread, and they'd have round, flat stones, and they put the bread kind of between stones, so the stone kind of looked like the bread. And he said, you know, you're the Son of God, command this to be turned into bread. And Jesus answered by quoting Deuteronomy, it takes more than bread to really live. And for the second test, he led him up and spread out all the kingdoms on earth on display at once. Then the devil said, they're all yours in all their splendor to serve your pleasure. I'm in charge of all of them and can turn them over to whoever I wish. Worship me and they're yours, the whole works. The devil controls the kingdoms of the world and he puts in power who he wants. Every once in a while you get somebody good, but usually leaders are not good. And even if he gets a good, you would get a good leader, the system is corrupt where the good leader has trouble doing good things. Jesus refused again, back in his refusal with Deuteronomy. Worship the Lord your God and only the Lord your God. Serve him with absolute single-heartedness. For the third test, the devil took him up to Jerusalem and put him on top of the temple. said, "Hey, you're God's son. Jump, it's written, isn't it, that he has placed you in care of the angels to protect you, and they will catch you. You won't so much as even stub your toe on a stone." "Yes, Jesus," said Jesus, "it's also written, don't you dare tempt the Lord your God." And that completed the testing. The devil retreated temporarily, lying in wait for another opportunity. So that's the way the devil works. He'll come and hassle you, but if we resist, he has to back off, and then he waits for some other opportunity. He's not there all the time. He kind of comes and goes. Let's go to Samuel in the Old Testament, 1 Samuel, chapter 8. This is where the Israelites were ruled by judges and prophets. They wanted a king. Didn't work out so well. Chapter 8, verse 1. "And when Samuel got to be an old man, he set his sons up as judges in Israel. His firstborn was named Joel, and the second, so on, so on, so on. But his sons didn't take after him. They were out for what they could get for themselves, taking bribes and corrupting justice." See, that's the problem. Some people, you put them in power, and they start thinking, "Oh, gee, I can, you know, get some money for this." And that's where a lot of things are in a lot of places in the world. If you want something done, you have to bribe somebody. What's that old movie with Rodney Dangerfield, Back to School? Yeah. And he gets into college, and he's got his business class. And the guy is teaching, the professor's teaching about how if you're going to start a factory making widgets and you got to have cost to build it and cost this. And then Rodney Dangerfield raises his hand and says, "Oh, you left out a whole lot of things. You got to bribe the local government. You got to bribe the unions. You got to bribe, you know." And unfortunately, that's even in a free country like ours, there's a lot of that stuff that goes on. And it shouldn't be that way because certain people are not honest, and you put them in position of power, and they will use that power for their own good instead of for helping people. Verse 4. "Fed up, all the elders of Israel got together and confronted Samuel at Ramah. Then they presented their case, said, 'Look, you're an old man, and your sons aren't following in your footsteps. And here's what we want you to do. Appoint a king to rule over us just like everybody else.'" So he said, "Look, all these other countries got socialized medicine and they got this, and we want to be like all these other countries." "And when Samuel heard their demand, 'Give us a king to rule us,' he was crushed. How awful. Samuel prayed to God, and God answered Samuel and said, 'Go ahead and do what they're asking. They are not rejecting you, they're rejecting me as their king. From the day I brought them out of Egypt, even unto this very day, they've been behaving like this, leaving me for other gods. And now they're doing it to you. So let them have their own way, but warn them what they're in for. Tell them the way kings operate, just what they're likely to get from a king.'" So Samuel told them, delivered God's warning to the people who were asking him to give them a king, and he said, "This is the way the king you're talking about operates. He'll take your sons and make soldiers of them. They have like chariots, cavalry, infantry, regiments and battalions, squadrons. He'll put some in forced labor on his farms, plowing, harvesting, others to make weapons of war or chariots, which he can ride in luxury. He'll put your daughters to work as beauticians, waitresses, cooks. He'll conscript your best fields, vineyards, orchards, and hand them over to his special friends. He'll tax your harvests and vintage to support his extensive bureaucracy." See, even back then they had bureaucracy. They had deep state. He's saying he'll put a deep state in place. That's what God's warning him about. "Your prize workers and best animals he'll take for his own use. He'll lay tax on all your flocks, and you'll end up no better than slaves. The day will come when you'll cry in desperation because your king you so much want for yourselves, but don't expect God to answer. But the people wouldn't listen to Samuel, said, no, we will have a king to rule us. Then we'll be just like the other nations. Our king will rule us and lead us and fight our battles. And Samuel took in what they said and rehearsed it with God. And God told Samuel, do what they say, make them a king. And Samuel dismissed the men of Israel and he told them to go home to their own cities. And this goes on for several chapters here. Finally, in chapter 15, they went to battle, and God gave King Saul, the first king, gave him specific instructions, and he specifically violated them. And one of the things he violated is, you ever notice when kings go to war, they spare the other king. And that's one of the things God told him not to do, is wasn't supposed to spare that other king. And Saul spared the other king. Eventually, Saul was not a good king at all. That's just the way it just always works out. Let's go to Acts chapter 12. Let me show you another bad king. So that's why I'm glad, you know, our system that we live in right now in the United States, some people say it's a democracy. We know it's not a democracy. We know it's a republic. And we get to elect representatives who are supposed to serve us. And if we don't like the representative, they have a 2 or 4 or 6 year term, and we can vote against them and elect somebody else. But these kings, once they're in there, they're kind of in there for life unless something happens. So in chapter 12, verse 1, and that's when King Herod got it into his head to go after some of the church members. He murdered James, John's brother. Now, this is not the James that wrote the book of James. This is a different James. This is the Apostle James. And when he saw how much it raised his popularity ratings with the Jews, I guess he had CNN doing polls for him, popularity polls, he arrested Peter. All this during Passover week, mind you. And had him, Peter, thrown in jail for putting 4 squads of soldiers each to guard him. He was planning a public lynching after the Passover. He was going to kill Peter, too, the Apostle Peter. And at that time, Peter was under heavy guard in the jailhouse, and the church prayed for him most strenuously. Then came time for Herod to bring him out for the kill that night, even though shackled with 2 soldiers, one on either side, Peter slept like a baby. The guards were at the door, keeping their eyes in place, and Herod was taking no chances. And suddenly there was an angel at his side, light flooding the room, and the angel shook Peter and said, hurry. And the handcuffs fell off his wrists. The angel said, get dressed, put on your shoes, and Peter did. Then grab your coat and let's get out of here. And Peter followed him, but didn't believe it was really an angel. He thought he was dreaming. You ever had a dream so real you thought it was... You know, when you first wake up, sometimes you're kind of disoriented, like, huh, what's going on? Past the first guard and then the second, they came to the iron gate that led to the city. It swung open before them on its own, and they went out onto the street free as a breeze. At the first intersection, the angel left him, going his own way, and Peter realized, oh, this was no dream. I can't believe it. It really happened. The master sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's vicious little production, and the spectacle of the Jewish mob was looking forward to. They were going to have this big public execution, get rid of Peter. And still shaking his head, amazed, went to Mary's house. Mary, who was John Mark's brother. The house was packed with praying friends, and while he knocked at the door at the courtyard, a young woman named Rhoda came to see who it was, and when they recognized his voice, Peter's voice, she was so excited and eager to tell everyone Peter was there, and she forgot to open the door and left him standing in the street. But they wouldn't believe. They wouldn't believe her, dismissing her report, saying, you're crazy. See, they were praying, but they weren't believing. It's interesting to see. Somebody must have believed, because it happened. But these people that were praying, sometimes people get all religious and pray for something, but nothing happens because they're not believing that it's really going to happen. She stuck by her story, insisting they still wouldn't believe her. It must be an angel. And all this time, poor Peter was standing out on the street, knocking away, saying, hey guys, let me in. What's going on in there? And finally, they opened up and saw him, and they went wild. And Peter put up his hands and calmed them down, and he described how everything happened. Now the master got him out of jail. Tell James and the brothers what happened. And he left them and went off to another place.